Welcome to the Sober Buddy Podcast, your boost of sober thinking and awesome life building. I'm Tara Zoe, CEO and co-founder here at Sober Buddy, and I am joined by notoriously sober Skinny Vinny, a man who spent the last 2 years of his active addiction living in a porta potty in Connecticut and is now a producer, director, and co-star of multiple shows. This is definitely going to be an interesting interview. But first, remember to download and subscribe to the Sober Buddy app, do some challenges, get some motivation, share screenshots of your sober tracker, and tell Buddy how you're feeling today. Welcome to the show, Vinny.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked.
I'm excited. Now, we were introduced through Dave from the Dopey Podcast.
Yes.
And he tells me that you're like one of his besties now.
We are. We're great friends.
I don't know if this is mutual.
No, it's mutual. I just got off the phone with him a couple minutes ago because we've been trying to figure out a way to get me out to DopeyCon.
Right.
It's been 2 weeks and 2 weeks going, and then I just got hit up to do a photo shoot on Saturday, and like, aww, dude, I'm sorry. Like, if you would have said this a week ago, like, we would have been all set, but you know,
last minute. Dave. Well, I'm going to be at DopeyCon. So, are you?
Now I'm jealous.
It's going to be super fun. I think he's declared that it's going to be the like funnest sober event ever or something like that.
Dude, I believe him. The things that he's been telling me, it sounds like it's going to be a blast.
Yes. He definitely knows how to entertain for sure.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
He hit me up randomly. I think it was summer of last year when I was living in Texas for a little bit.
Okay.
And it's funny because I had my manager at the time reach out to him because Dopey was making the rounds around on Instagram. So I was like, oh, a sober podcast, you know, right. like last year, my career was like, I wouldn't say just starting, but it was like gaining the traction and it was starting to really go, you know? And
right.
So I was having my manager at the time just start contacting as many outlets that I could find, you know?
Right.
Dopey was one of them, and we got nothing, no reply, no nothing. and then a couple months go by and he hit me up and I was like, oh, you finally saw the email. He's like, what email? I'm just like, oh, okay, well, let's do it, you know? And then, the episode that I did, I got very deep and very dark and didn't let anything out. And or didn't leave anything out, and it ended up being like a very well, like the numbers did very well,
right?
And
right.
Kind of love that I've gotten from that episode. I still get love today, and this was last year.
Yeah, well, he has a way of kind of pulling information out of people. I've noticed, like, he's probably an amazing therapist.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
I feel like even when I went out to visit last time, I was like, I feel like I opened up too much to Dave. I was like, he just pulls everything out of you.
Yep.
Well, anyhow, so you got introduced to Dave, you got that. Now you're on the Sober Buddy Podcast, and we are so lucky to have you. And I think that you have a super cool story. And tell me about, let's work backwards. Tell me about what you're doing right now, because you've had this huge kind of turnaround and story arc, and you're just career has taken off. So tell me what you're doing now.
So currently I am one of the cameramen / producer of Steve-O, all his like YouTube content, and I'm one of the producers of his podcast Wild Ride.
Okay.
And that has just started within the last few months, maybe 6 months. And it's funny too, because I remember when I was still living in sober living, this was maybe 2019.
Okay.
And me and Zach, we had a relationship with Steve, but never really, like, Zach has worked with him a few times, but I was still very new in the industry and very like fresh. And, but I had he was like more of an acquaintance, you know, like we were friendly with each other. And then he started his podcast Wild Ride. I think it was like right when the pandemic started.
Okay.
And I remember saying to Zach, I'm like, dude, I want to work with Steve on the podcast. Mm. And I said that, and like, I'm a huge believer in manifestation.
Right. I was like, you just like called that in.
Yeah. And it's crazy, man. Everything that I've like told myself I'm going to do, it has happened. And I can't tell you why or how. All I could say is just like, I just continue to do the next right thing and things just work out. And plus, like, yeah, I bust my ass and work right. my ass off, you know? But yeah. And so that's been the last few months and been filming some bits for his live tour, the Bucket List show. And that's been another crazy experience. I finally got to see what I've been shooting for him on the big screen last Saturday.
Oh, cool.
And I didn't even know. I thought he was going to wait until next year. And so, and I didn't even know that they were going to put it in so soon. So right. I got a bunch of like wristbands for me, and my friends, and we went to go see the show, and I'm just like in the crowd, and all of a sudden everything that I filmed is on the big screen. And it was like, wow. It was almost like a couple tears came out, you know?
Yeah, just like what a moment. What yeah. a moment.
Remember I texted everybody so fast. I was like, whoa. Like, yeah, it was cool.
That is super cool. And then, so you're having this moment. So let's rewind then.
Yeah.
Let's talk about where you were and compared to where you are now. So what would you say was like, you know, the kind of lower point, you know, that you were at?
Yeah. I mean, I think the lowest point mentally would be when the, I was living in that porta potty and I came to the acceptance that I'm going to live the rest of my life a lonely heroin addict and I'm going to die a lonely heroin addict. So when you come to that like acceptance and realization, nothing really matters anymore. Like you have like all hope, all light, everything's gone.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not the type of person to commit suicide or anything like that, but I am the type of person to go out guns blazing, you know, like I take everything
that's
to
alarming.
You know, even in my sobriety, I take everything to the extreme. So it's, I don't know. It's, and especially when I was getting loaded, I'm sure it's a lot of people, we like to touch the line of death when we're getting high, you know, because that's what feels the best. Like get as high as we can.
Right.
Before we tip over. Exactly. And so that's what I was doing. It was like that for a couple years. And I don't want to say it was scary, but it was very, it was dark and very lonely. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then, so at what point did you say, like, what was the change moment? Like, what was the moment that said, like, okay, I'm going to start to, you know, make
for
sense.
Sure. Yeah. I had this old friend of mine who came out to Los Angeles like 6 years prior, and he ended up getting sober out here, gathered some time, somehow found my phone number, and he called me while I was in that porta potty and was like, hey, I'm in Los Angeles. I have 6 years sober. I'll fly you to LA, but you have to go to rehab and you have to get sober.
Well, so he was thinking about you.
Yeah. And my thought was, yeah, sure, I'll take your plane ticket to Los Angeles because it's easier to be homeless.
For sure.
It's the weather is good all year round, you know? So I had no intentions of getting sober whatsoever. It was more of, yeah, sure, a free trip to Los Angeles, you know? And so that's what I did. I took his flight. I ended up going to his rehab. I left after 2 days, and that's how I started my homelessness in California. I started off on Newport Beach and slowly made my way up north. And the last of the homelessness in California was on Skid Row for a few months.
Right.
So, and then at the time, my mom was still paying for my private health insurance because I was lying and manipulating her and telling her, yeah, I'm doing good, you know? And part of me thinks that she didn't believe me. And she was just like, you know, she's my mom.
Right.
And she'll do whatever for me. But she was still paying for my health insurance. So every once in a while, I would go into a sober living or a treatment facility just to sleep in a bed and eat some food for a few days, you know?
Right.
So that's what I was doing, going in and out, in and out, in and out. And the last place that I got kicked out of, I was waiting outside for my Uber, and I had this, I like to call it a spiritual experience.
Okay.
I had this experience happen to me where I had this best friend named John who passed away back in 2015 from an overdose.
Okay.
this dude was so, he was so gentle. He was sweet. Wouldn't hurt a fly. So smart. And he passed away just from his first overdose. Mm. When I was waiting for my Uber, I had the most vivid whisper of his voice saying, dude, enough is enough. Wow. And it scared me enough because I at the time I wasn't spiritual. I don't believe in anything. Right.
Right.
So at the time it really scared me. So I'm like, okay, maybe let me make a call. So I called the program director and I was like, and I begged him for another chance.
And, of the place that you were getting kicked out of?
Yes.
Okay.
Not. So it was the program director of the IOP that I was a bunch of sober livings that go to this IOP.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I kicked out of that sober living. But I called the program director and I was like, hey, man, please give me another shot. He puts me in another house. And in that house, I walk in and I see Zach. I already knew who he was. He had a pretty decent online presence.
Okay.
He does the same thing that I did growing up. Growing up, I had a dream of being famous and traveling the world and doing stupid things with my friends and filming it to entertain it. That was my dream. Like literally, I remember it was like October 2000, the Jackass show just came out, just aired on TV. And I remember pointing at the TV saying, Mom, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
And your mom's like, I'm so proud of you, honey. That's just what I was hoping for.
Yeah. But my mom was so supportive. Like she like laughed. She's like, okay, you know, and it's crazy too, because like 2 years ago when I went home, or not even 2 years, like a year and a half ago, I went home to visit her and that memory popped up in my head. Mm. And I like ran to my mom's room. I was like, Mom, remember like 10 years ago, or 20 years ago when I said that? And her jaw just dropped and she was like, you're doing it. Yeah. And you're not just doing it. You're doing it with the people that you pointed to on TV.
That's crazy.
You know,
crazy.
And yeah, so I grew up filming, and when I met Zach, he needed a filmer at the time. And I had experience behind the camera. So he was just like, all right, dude, like I'll let you film one video for me. See how you do. We do this video on the Venice Boardwalk where we attached a boxing glove to a gas powered remote control car.
Okay.
We go on the Venice Boardwalk and we drive the car into his nuts at like 40 miles per hour.
Okay.
And I'm filming this and I'm like, oh my God, this feels so good. This is what I used to love. You know, it's just like, it's such a, like, we're so not normal. You know, it's like all of us are such attention whores, and we all just like, we do it for the love of the attention and to entertain other people. Right.
Yes.
And we film this video and we post the next day and it ends up going crazy viral. And my name's attached to it. And all these people that I grew up idolizing, like Tony Hawk and Steve-O, they see this video, they're commenting, they're liking, and my mind's just blown. And this is 1 month sober. And right. my mind's just blowing. You know, I'm just like, what the fuck? How did I film that? Hmm. So Zach was just like, all right, dude, like, welcome to the crew. And since then, it's just been a nonstop. That was February 2018. And since then, it's just been a nonstop roller coaster ride, snowball effect, just getting bigger, bigger, bigger. And once I got the little taste of fame, it was like a year after that, they filmed the video pranking me, and that prank blew up online, and I got noticed a few times just from that prank.
That's cool.
When that happened and I started to get noticed, I was like, oh man, that feels good. that's like a high in itself, you know?
Yeah.
And, so that's when I decided to start making my own content, and, it just worked out. You know,
now I have a question. Do you think that because it was like 1 month into your sobriety and you're in a program, do you think that kind of like positive win was like a bump that kept you going?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. But let me, okay. If I'm going to be honest, I still had an intention of getting loaded, but later.
Okay. You know, I think that's important to note, because it helps people who are feeling that way to know that that's something that is normal.
For sure. Like it's like what they call like the prelapse, right? You have it in your head that you're already going to get high, you know? but, and at this time I wasn't working the steps yet.
Yeah.
You know, I was hitting meetings. I was lying to my house manager saying that I was working with a sponsor and doing the steps just so he'd let us travel and film.
Right.
But it was that purpose that I found that was keeping me sober at that time. And then like almost a year goes by, and in my head, I'm like, oh man, I'm at a year sober. I don't need AA. I don't need the program. I'm doing this on my own. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I get hired to work in the sober living that I was living at.
Mm.
So now I'm it's the house that I was at was mandatory, find a sponsor, mandatory to do steps, mandatory meetings. So now I'm preaching something that I'm not doing myself.
Right.
Now it's like eating me alive. So, and then I'm just like, okay, you know what? I don't want to be that guy that's telling people to do something when I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And what can it do? You know, it could only make me feel better. And then I start working the steps, and that's what kind of changed my whole perception on life.
Oh, that's right? Cool. Tell me more about that.
So I like, even in that first year of sobriety, I still thought like, oh, the world is such a bad place. Mm. Everyone's out for themselves. Can't trust anybody. Love doesn't exist. Mm. It's just all evil. Right. Mm. But working the steps kind of was like this release of, yeah, I was happy that I was happy that I was doing all this cool stuff,
right?
But I still had this like weight on me of resentments, and I was still tripping out about the past of all the people that I've hurt.
Right.
I wasn't really moving forward and growing as a man. So when I started to do the steps, it was like a release. It helped me deal with all that internal stuff. And I say this all the time. Yeah, all this cool stuff that I've been doing, all the cool stuff that I've been able to get, the places that I've been able to go, that's amazing, right? But the day that I was able to look in the mirror and love myself and be like, oh, dude, you're pretty fucking cool. That was like the most freeing feeling that I've ever had in my life.
Oh, I love that. I hear that. I feel that. I think that's amazing. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And when that happened, it like elevated everything, not just in my personal life, but in my career and my videos and everything, because it gave me that confidence that I was able to just like, it was just bleeding everywhere. This confidence that I was able to get was just bleeding in all areas of my life.
That's amazing.
And it just elevated everything.
I love that. Love that. So how long do you think into working the 12 steps did it take for that kind of realization to happen?
I don't know. Maybe I was around like the ninth step.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I was at the ninth step and, maybe a year and a half sober.
Yeah.
And man, it was like, I get the chills sometimes talking about it. Cause I remember I remember it like it was yesterday. Like I was staring at myself in the bathroom of the sober living.
Yeah.
You know? And it was, so freeing, man.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And this whole like manifestation stuff, I totally believe it. Mm. And now ever since I got sober, I'm a believer of everything happens for a reason, and I believe in a higher power and all this stuff. You know, it might not necessarily be God, but I 100% believe in a higher power.
Well, and it seems like your life has been, when you look back at it, it has been completely peppered with these moments of intentionality.
For sure.
Even your friend calling you and getting you out to LA, or, you know, all these different things happening. It definitely looks intentional.
Yeah. Cause my whole career, my whole life, I was in that sober living for three years.
Mm-hmm. Working and living. Mm-hmm.
And my whole career, it kind of blossomed while I was living in the garage of that sober living. And and people are just like, dude, like how did you do it? You know, and every time I say the same thing, I just continued to do the next right thing. I continued to be honest with myself and everybody around me, and I'm in service. And obviously the 12 steps, you know?
Right, right.
But other than that, it's just, I owe everything. And this is just a cliche AA saying, you know, it's just like, I owe everything to the program. All the it just has given me everything that I have. Relationships right. with my mom, relationships with my family, people that I don't even know how they forgave me or how, like, why. Sometimes I think, like, damn, I have hurt my family so bad. Why would they, even though I'm doing so good, why would they forgive me and want to be a part of my life? Like, it baffles me. That's how fucked up I was in the past.
Does that change your view on love? Not to get deep or anything.
I don't know. So love is a part of my higher power. It's a piece of my higher power for sure. And the love I have with there's like different kinds of love, right?
Right,
it's
for
like
sure.
The love that I have for, that me and my mother have, you know, mm-hmm. it's like this thing that, like, it's the tightest thing that you could ever have on planet Earth.
I would
right?
like to take a side note and to say, Vinny, you are Italian, correct? I am. That's a special kind of mother love Italians have. Yeah. It's different than anywhere else in the world.
100%. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
But you know what was happening to try to get off the, I don't want to get off the love thing, but real quick,
I did get,
I had survivor's guilt for the longest time. The first like 3 years of my sobriety. I'll be 5 in February.
I was just going to ask, how far are you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be 5 in February. And the first 3 years I had the survivor's guilt like crazy, because my best friend that I was telling you about, John, he passed away from that one overdose.
Yeah.
This didn't do any of the kind of stuff that I used to do to get loaded. He was a genius. He was so sweet, so smart. Like, it was insane. And he passed off of one overdose. I have 15 overdoses on my belt.
Wow.
And a lot of those overdoses have been me waking up with a tube down my throat with EMTs all around me. In the middle, one's in like the middle of Vermont, one's in the city of New Haven, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would get survivor's guilt, because I would say, why me? Why right. did I make it out? I was a piece of shit. Can I swear?
Yes, we have to say sorry, Paul. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Dave started it. He pushed us over the edge, and now we have to say sorry, Paul.
Sorry, Paul. But yeah, I was not. I hurt a lot of people, you know, and I so I would think, why me? Why did I make it out? I didn't just survive. I survived. I'm living, and I'm not just living. I'm thriving.
Right.
And I'm doing what I've been dreaming of doing since I was 10 years old. So why me? And then I had a long talk with my sponsor. I had a long talk with one of my mentors, and they were like, dude, you've been given this position where you have a decent sized following and people look up to you. People love you guys. So why not make your story public, so it has the potential to like help some people that struggle with the same stuff that you do.
Right.
And that's when it kind of was like a light bulb was like, that makes so much sense.
Right. It made things you feel like there was purpose.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. It's just so cool. The thing that I love so much about, like, whenever I do an interview or anything, it's like, it's almost like if you look at it, there was such a like deficit, like you were saying, like so much darkness. And then it's like that got not only filled up and fixed, but then like all this positive, you know, all this light came out of it. And it's such like a comeback story. I mean, such a like inspiration that it's not just that I can stop being in pain, but I can actually thrive in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And my biggest thing is being in a position where it's like helping people is like the most important thing to me. It's like, because I know when it's like helping people helps me. It's like,
right,
it's like, the AA stuff too, you know, it's like the having the sponsor, you know, it's like the sponsee helps the sponsor by doing step work, you know, and and it's the same thing in life in general. It's like when you help people, you get it back. And it might not be, in the areas that you were hoping you might get it back, but it just all works out. And it's like, it's this thing that I have such a hard time explaining it, but all I can say is it just works out.
Right. Well, even the act of helping, like when you're in that moment of helping, you're also talking to yourself. You know, it's kind of like how when, like to really fully understand a concept, you got to kind of teach it. You know, I know for me that I'll read something or I'll understand something until I discuss it or talk to someone about it or try and tell somebody else. Then I'm like, oh, it's as I'm processing it and talking, I get it better. You know, so I think that probably helps too.
For sure.
Yeah. And then we can see our growth too. I think we can see our growth when we're talking to someone newer, you know, in a stage, you can say, oh, wow. Like even remembering when you were that way or you felt those ways. And now you can see the distance that you've come.
Oh, 100%. And every once in a while, I will go back to the sober living that I got sober at, and I'll help out around the house or it's just another way for me to give back, right? And to see the guys that are so fresh and so new and to see how hard-headed they are. And so like, so they don't want to take direction. And it just, it's like, holy shit. That was me.
That was me.
It wasn't even that long ago. You know, it's like 4 years, 5 years isn't really that much time if you think about it. I was getting loaded for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
So like the 15, that's really not that much time, but to see the growth that I've had in the last few years, it's mind blowing. And like, it's a beautiful thing, man. It's to be able to, you know, it's like the small things too. Like when I see my mom, she's not afraid to leave her purse unattended. Right. You know, it's like stuff like that. It's like the trust. People call me when they need help. Mm. People trust me to be there. You know, like it's those kind of things that make all of it worth it.
That is beautiful. So going kind of back to this whole, Jackass thing and the whole filming these shows. So you put yourself out there like a lot, like when you're in front of the camera with everything, like I'll even look on your Instagram and be like, oh my God, I've seen too much.
Yeah. Yep. That'll do it.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going to deep dive, but not too deep. Cause I don't want to know. Like there's a lot of stuff like the podcast, like you were saying, you're completely out there. So do you ever kind of go like, was that too much? Or are you just like, whatever, as long as it gets good ratings? Like, what is your feeling here?
That's a good question. Podcasting has actually ruined some relationships that I've been in.
Because you share too much?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, hold on.
Because I don't.
Go back on that. Tell me the details. Yeah.
So it's just because I don't have a filter. I have a very hard time balancing out my personal life and my entertainment life.
Right.
You know, it's at this point, there is no line.
Right.
And I also think that's why people love us so much.
Yeah. Yeah. The authenticity. Like,
because we're real. We don't fake anything. We don't tell lies. We don't do anything. What you see is what you get. Right. Right. And I think this goes back to when Jackass first came out. Right. It's like, yeah, it was funny. Yeah, like some of the stunts they did were gnarly. They got hurt. But I can honestly say I think the reason why it was so successful was because the camaraderie between the friends.
Right.
And all the bit. Right. And people would daydream. They'd be like, oh, I wish I had a group of friends that I could do that with. Yeah. You know, like stuff like that. So I think that's why Jackass was so successful. And I think that's why people love us just as much, you know. And we make it fun. We make it like, yeah, sometimes we do things that are a little too much, maybe too gnarly or too disgusting, but that's just our sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we know we're not like the average person.
Right. And although I will say I have an 18-year-old son
Yeah.
And I feel like it would never be too much for him. I feel like he
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's ruined relationships, man. The last three relationships that I've been in, the relationship has stopped because of my career.
And is it because you were sharing current things or past things, or I just have to know, like, just not so, everything, but you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, the relationship that it messed up, the podcast messed it up because I was talking about, I was a guest on another person's podcast. I actually maybe think it was Dopey.
I was like, it's probably Dave's because Dave gets you to talk. I'm telling you, he gets you to talk.
And I was saying, I'm in this new relationship. This girl's amazing. I didn't say her name. I didn't anything like that. But, I mentioned that she smoked weed and then the conversation came up like, oh, does that bother you? How do you do it? You know? And I was completely honest. I'm like, yes. I mean, sometimes like it doesn't bother me to the point where it's like triggering or it makes me want to do it, but it's bothering to the point. It's like, it's a little frustrating. That okay, you've smoked fucking 9 joints already and it's 1:00 PM. Like, come on, you know, like I'm awful. Like, I love the weed culture. I love all that. I just can't do it.
You know,
but it's like, how many joints do you need to smoke in 4 hours?
Right.
So I was like poking at it and I was making fun of it and like having fun.
She didn't really enjoy
that one too much. And so that it ruined that relationship. And then like, I also said something about like some like fantasies that I have or like all this stuff. And she didn't like it. So we ended up splitting. And then the relationship before that one, she was very shy and she didn't like all the cameras around all the time. And that one, it bothers me because it's like, you know what you got yourself into when we first started, you know?
Right.
It's like, now you made me really fall in love with you and like all this stuff. And now you're saying that you can't be around me because it's overwhelming. I get that.
Yeah.
Well, most people can't be around us. Like, it's, I totally understand that. But, so that one really messed me up for a long time.
Oh,
but, and then this last one was just like, because I was working too much. I was working with Steve down in San Diego for like 2 weeks straight. And then, as soon as I get back, I had to do America's Got Talent, and I was in Pasadena for 10 days, and she was just like, oh, you're not here for me. And I'm just like,
we have to stop on the America's Got Talent thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So what did you do, filming for them?
No, I was on stage.
You were on stage. How did that not come up? Okay. Yeah. Wait, hold on. What was your talent?
That's a good question.
Oh my gosh. He's showing a picture right now for people who are on the podcast of him in a pink tutu and white tank top with his whole troop of guys.
Yeah. So, that's a great question. What's our talent?
What was the talent?
So we did stunts on stage.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And, the way that I got on was very weird. And, I just got back from a Florida trip and I get a call from my buddy Curtis from the UK. He has a stunt crew from over in London.
Okay.
We've never met before. And he calls me. He's like, hey man, I'm in LA. We would love to meet you. We would love to finally meet you. And also, do you want to do America's Got Talent with us? I was like, yeah, duh. Like, of course. And I was like, when? He's like, you have to come here now. So I was like, great, I'll be there. So I fly to Pasadena and we do the auditions, not thinking. We were like, this is just a joke. We're just making fun of it. You know, we end up getting a standing ovation from Simon Cowell and we make it to the live semifinals. And like, it was just
now
like,
I gotta look it up. Like, has it aired yet?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Live. Cause it was a live semifinals.
Yeah, it was a live semifinals. This was maybe almost a month ago now.
Okay. So I have this funny thing with America's Got Talent I've never like sat and watched the show like in real time or whatever it is, but on YouTube, when I'm on YouTube, at some point I clicked on an America's Got Talent clip, right? Like, you know, they'll do like little pieces of America's Got Talent. And then it has all the side recommendations and I kept watching America's Got Talent clips. So I would do, I would get stuck. So like every once in a while I'll get stuck and I'll be like, end up crying. I'm like, people are so amazing.
That's so funny you say that. I was just talking to this, my friend of mine, and I've only admitted this to a few people, but I'm going to do it right now. I cry during the golden buzzers.
Like, oh my God. Because they do the whole story build up of their life and
everything. Yeah. And then they have the gold confetti and they put it in slow-mo and that beautiful music. And it's just like
a triumph moment. They've been trying so hard to be recognized. It's because you feel it, because you know what it feels like to be like recognized. But oh my gosh, I do. I get so like emotional about America's Got Talent. And then I got my mother into it. My mom's like, oh my gosh, I'm in an America's Got Talent rabbit hole. But yeah, so I have this thing where I'll be like, I'm in my feels from America's Got Talent.
Yeah. It was a really fun experience. Very surreal. Very like what the hell am I doing here kind of thing.
And that was just recently. So now who knows what's going to come out of that?
I know. And like it turned out to be this whole debacle online. People were like hating us because we were taking up a spot that an actual talented person could be on. And we're just like the whole time, like when we were doing the after we did the semifinals, the next day is you do the elimination rounds and we're on stage. They play that really suspenseful music. They dim the lights to red. And we're just like, we don't want to win. Like, and they just kept pushing us through.
Oh my God.
And
because you're like, so entertaining, I'm sure. Yeah, and they're like, this is great. This is great.
And like every time they would say our names, we're just like, no, we don't want it.
You're like, we don't really actually care. But then did you start caring because of the music and the pump? And
No, not at all. Because it's like when you do live stunts, it's so hard to because we hurt ourselves. So it's like so hard to continue doing it. And for something like a competition, you just have to up yourself every time.
Yeah.
And the semifinals, like we had them buy $15,000 worth of cactus and we played tug of war. So there's like two platforms with 15 grand worth of cactus in the middle of the platform.
And you guys fell into the cactus?
I didn't, thank God.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, and then like this right here.
See, I cannot watch stuff like that. Oh my gosh. Now, has anybody ever gotten like where you have to be hospitalized or something from any of your stunts?
I personally haven't. My worst injury has been a burn, and I probably should have gone to the hospital, but I didn't. I had my manager at the time put ointment all over me, and I had second degree burns on my testicles. And
oh my God.
Yeah. And
okay, I would just like to formally say, don't try this at home, kids.
Yes, please don't try that. We're so-called professionals.
They're professional you're not called jackass. What do you guys call
call ourselves professional idiots.
Professional idiots. These are professional idiots. Yeah. Do not become an amateur idiot.
Yeah, do not become an amateur idiot. We've done this for a long time.
Real professional idiots are harmed in the making of these films.
Oh, no, but it's crazy to us because some people do, like Zach, he was in Jackass 4. Right. You know, so like we're getting called the new generation of Jackass.
For and sure. Do you remember Tom Green?
Of course.
Legend. I used to love Tom Green when I was a teenager.
Yeah. It was so good.
Okay. Yes. I was like, I don't know if was that before Jackass, Tom Green?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think the tail end of the Tom Green show was like right when Jackass.
Right. I feel like Jackass started when I was just coming into adulthood. So like my teen years were like Tom Green. Yeah.
Adulthood in the year 2000?
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you. That's rude. But
yes, I am older than I appear.
I'll be 35 in a few weeks.
Yeah.
I was when Jackass came out, I want to say I was like 14.
Right. Well, I'm going to be 40 in a couple months. So 5 or 6 years older than you. Yeah, 5 years older. That makes sense because I was out of high school before you were in it.
Yeah. But yeah, to have people call us the new generation of Jackass, it's,
I mean, whoa.
What a feeling, whoa. You know, it's like,
especially with how much noise there is right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's one show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like before it was just like whatever's on TV, you know, now there's a whole bunch of amateur idiots.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like people have been hurting themselves on camera for a very long time. And and people love to watch because it's like, even when it's like really gnarly, people can't look away. Ooh. It's like a deer getting stuck in headlights. You know,
I can't watch that stuff. I'm like a super empath, right? So like I am there in whatever I'm watching. I cannot watch anything like that. I can't watch medical shows where they cut people. Mm-mm.
I can't see. I used to be able to watch like when guys would skate and like break their leg or something. I would be able to watch that back in the day. But now it's like, if I see something like that on Instagram, oh, I'm gone. I can't.
Do you think it's because you've had second degree burns? Like, you know, like your brain knows what it's like now.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I've gotten very lucky. You know, I like that burn was the worst. And then, I like sprained my wrist on one of them. But Zach has broken his leg. He's been hospitalized a few times. He's been doing it for a lot longer than I have. You know?
Does that ever worry you though?
Yeah, of course. Of course, there's some sort of worry that because look, that like we do things that potentially could really fuck us up. But we do it in the safest way possible. If that makes any sense, you know, we're doing something very dangerous, but in a safe way.
Gotcha.
And sometimes like when we're working with big productions, there will be either a stunt coordinator or EMT on set, you know, but a lot of the times when we're just doing it for the fun and doing it for social media, there's none of those, you know, right. we just have been doing it and studying it long enough where we know what's the best way to do it.
Well, I feel like, okay. Like I feel like I have been the downer in the situation. It's like saying this is dangerous, but this really, it just bothers me. I'm so worried about it.
Yeah. I mean, dude, especially now that we've gotten older, because like the Jackass, I feel like the Jackass guys, the OGs, you know, they've been doing it for so long that they can get away with people still wanting to watch them do it.
Right.
You know, I feel like us new guys, I don't think we have that longevity in us as far as like stunts and stuff like that. So that's why after this fourth movie came out, we feel like the best way to go about doing it is transitioning more into comedy and sketch comedy and stand up and like acting and stuff like that. So we're trying, and that's a reason why we started the podcast, you know, and we're trying to find out that transition that might work for us, you know. And
definitely
it's been difficult, you know, and like, and especially with the internet nowadays, things are very watered down. TikTok right. being the main one now, it's like we can't post our stuff on TikTok. I've gotten big pages deleted, and right. So it's like even Instagram sometimes, like I just got taken off the creator fund. So like all the money that I was making on Instagram, I got taken off recently. So
yeah,
just because I posted a video with my butt showing, you know, it's like,
well,
like, you know, so it's like a blessing and a curse because yeah, I'm losing income from that, but it makes us try to think outside the box as far as like, entertain in a different way.
Yeah, I think that could be cool. It could take it to another level of sophistication because you have to like go to another thing. Yeah. And like you were saying, I wonder if the character building element, you know, because you were saying like with Jackass, even like seeing all of the friends was what was exciting to you.
Yeah.
So I see how you guys are doing that with like the podcast and everything you're doing is the character building. And then people want to follow you. It's kind of what you're doing.
Yeah. So I don't, somehow it baffles me. It really blows my mind out. Like, cause like we're not the smartest. We're definitely not the most good looking, and we're like, sometimes we're funny. And so it's like, it baffles me how we've been able to like keep this going and like keep it growing and turning it into this thing where people fucking love us. It's strange.
That is so cool. Well, I love it for you. I love that, you know, you turned your life into something cool. You know, you were in a dark space, you know, like you said, and you've brought it out. You've brought it into a really cool place. And I think it's just starting, you know, who knows where your life's going to go. Yeah. And it sounds, I mean, you were just on the big screen, you know, something you filmed, and you were also on America's Got Talent in a pink tutu fighting over cacti.
It's, you know, it's so good hearing that from somebody else, because every once in a while, and I feel like this is like my addiction and my disease coming out in me, you know, I feel like because you want things now and you think, you know, and every once in a while I'll get in this mood of like, I should be further along, you know, and sometimes I forget that shit. I've only been doing on camera work for 2 years, 3 years, you know, so to be able to hear it from somebody else, like, oh, I've had my own TV show. Oh, I film for Steve-O. Oh, I do this. It's like a very, it's a good feeling, and it keeps me grounded. And I look up to Steve-O and Scott Randolph, like they're mentors. They're like big brothers, and not just in sobriety, but in entertainment and just life itself. And I had this conversation with Scott. I was like, guys, you guys are killing it. You guys are making so much money with merch and touring and movies and shows and all this stuff. I'm here trying to make a few bucks on Instagram to try to sell a couple shirts, you know? And he's like, dude, shut the fuck up. You were homeless.
You lived in a porta potty
4 years ago. And look at you, dude, you have your own TV show. Like, he's like, people dream of that. Right. You're like, you know how many people move to LA to dream of becoming an actor, and they get stuck working this waiter job and just never hit a role. And like, I came out here, I wasn't even looking for it.
Yeah.
And it just fell on my lap, you know? And when he said that, I was just like, okay, I'll shut up.
You know, it is hard though. I understand that. Like, cause I'm a goal chaser, you know, I'm like, and when we get fixated on kind of like a finish line or a place we're trying to get, it's, you can miss everything else that is happening, that is growing and changing your life. And every once in a while you have to stop and say, like, I'll be like, oh, another year happened and I didn't reach this goal. But that year could have been completely transformational in my life. But if I'm just focusing on that one goal, I think nothing happened.
Yeah.
So I feel that, you know, and I have, it is a reality check to go, wait a second, let me look and think of all the things that have happened.
Yeah. After I had that conversation, he's like, dude, I want you to go home and I want you to write down on paper, not your phone, not your computer. I want you to write down on paper everything that you've done in the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right. So I came home and I started writing everything down, like as far as like projects I've worked on, people I've worked with, accomplishments that I've made. And it was just like, whoa, like so many of the, it's just like so many of those things were like bucket list items, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, whoa, dude. Like, because when you're in LA and you're just, it's like a constant grind.
Yeah. LA is tough. That's a tough culture.
You have to just keep moving. You don't even have time to resonate and like reflect on what you've been able to do, you know? So it's just like one thing after another. And so when I wrote that list down, I was just like, dude, this is gnarly. Like, TV shows, I've been in magazines, I've working with Steve-O, like all this shit. I've toured around the country with them. Like that was like another thing. And it's just like a very I stay in gratitude. I stay grateful every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. I feel that. Yeah. It's definitely a thing. So there we go. That's a thing, people. Write down what you've done. So as we wrap this up, because we've been just having the best conversation. So what would you tell? So if someone, because people listening to this podcast are usually like sober curious or like actively in recovery. So what would you tell, like, what would be like the one piece of advice you would give someone who's just going through it right now and trying to get sober?
I think this is the most important thing, and it's just have faith that it gets easier. That's huge, because I remember in the beginning I was just like, I was doing all this cool shit, but like I was still all messed up in my head, you know? And it gets easier. And the other biggest thing is like being able to let go and just like let someone else steer the wheel for a little bit. It's like taking direction. And trust me, I hate taking direction from people.
Right.
Like we think we know it all, especially addicts. You know, we think we know what's best. We think we know everything.
Right.
And I'm coming up on 5 years. I still don't know. I don't know shit. I don't know what's best for me. I just take direction from people that know better than I do.
Right, right. So it had to come into that humility of, like you were saying, all those, you know, strong-headed people coming in at the beginning of the recovery. And you kind of hit this humility moment, like, okay.
Yeah. Okay, dude, you're right. I don't know shit. you control my life for a little bit.
You know? That's freeing. That's super freeing to do that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, I love it. I love the advice. I have had a fun time talking to you about all of the stuff that you're doing. And thank you so much for coming on the Sober Buddy podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
And for all the people who are out there listening, your life can be better than before. Make sure you go check out the Sober Buddy app. Take it one moment, one day at a time. You have got this.